documentary.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
It is a shock. What happened was not small, really. While coming on the way in the car, I saw things. The destruction is unbearable.
Israel's war on Gaza hits the six-month mark as Israeli ground troops withdraw from Khan Yunis, leaving behind a city in ruins. We'll get the latest with Palestinian physician and activist Dr. Mustafa Barghouti. Then we continue our conversation with international law professor Niamh Gordon.
The situation in Israel, and Israel admits to it that it controls the area from the river to the sea. And so the situation is that there is one state. The one state is a settler colonial apartheid state. And our project now is how to democratize it.
And millions of people across the U.S. will be donning protective glasses to witness the solar eclipse today. We'll speak with a NASA climate scientist about the phenomenon and about climate change, how greenhouse gases in the atmosphere have reached new record highs. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Palestinians are returning to the devastated city of Khan Yunis after Israel withdrew troops from southern Gaza to prepare for an attack on Rafah. Residents of Khan Yunis say the city has been largely reduced to rubble and smells like death. The temporary troop withdrawal comes 6 months after Israel began its assault on Gaza following the Hamas attack on October 7th. The official death toll in Gaza has topped 33,100, but many fear the actual number is far higher. The Guardian reports tens of thousands have disappeared in Gaza over the past 6 months, with their whereabouts unknown. On Friday, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres repeated his call for a ceasefire and the release of all hostages still held in Gaza.
More than half the population, over 1 million people, are facing catastrophic hunger. Children in Gaza today are dying for lack of food and water. This is incomprehensible and entirely avoidable. Nothing can justify the collective punishment of the Palestinian people.
On Friday, the head of Save the Children U.S., Yanti Sirepto, addressed the U.N. Security Council.
350,000 children under the age of five are at risk of starvation as we speak. The world is staring down the barrel of a man-made famine. The hunger in the north is of a particular concern, where people have now resorted to eat animal feed or tree leaves. If we continue down this path of all parties to conflict, flagrantly breaching the rule of war and international humanitarian law, zero accountability, powerful nations refusing to use the levers of influence at their disposal, then the next set of mass deaths of children in Gaza will not be from bullets and bombs. It will be from starvation and malnutrition.
More video has emerged from Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza, which was largely destroyed during Israel's two-week siege. This is Jonathan Whittle of the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs speaking on the grounds of Al-Shifa.
We're here in what used to be Shifa Hospital in the north of Gaza and Gaza City. Hospitals should always be places of safety. Hospitals should always be protected, places of healing. And yet I'm standing around in the midst of utter devastation. Shifa has literally become a graveyard. There are bodies still in this courtyard. The buildings have been completely destroyed.
The International Court of Justice has begun a hearing today in The Hague to decide whether Germany has violated the Genocide Convention by providing military and financial aid to Israel. The case was brought by Nicaragua, which accused Germany of facilitating the commission of genocide in Gaza. Nicaraguan Ambassador Carlos José Arguello Gómez addressed the court earlier today.
In the present case, Nicaragua is also requesting the court to order that Germany to cease providing support to Israel in its campaign of destruction of the Palestinian people. But in the present case, Nicaragua is acting not only on its own behalf on the basis of the rights and obligations conferred by the peremptory norms invoked, but also on behalf of the Palestinian people that is being subjected to one of the most destructive military actions in modern history.
The ICJ hearing is being held as Al Jazeera reports a group of 600 civil servants in Germany have written to Chancellor Olaf Scholz, calling on him to immediately cease armed deliveries to Israel. In Washington, D.C., 40 Democratic members of Congress, including former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, have written President Biden urging him to halt new arms transfers to Israel following Israel's killing of 7 aid workers from World Central Kitchen last week. The lawmakers wrote, quote, in light of the recent strike against aid workers and the ever-worsening humanitarian crisis, we believe it is unjustifiable to approve these weapons transfers, they wrote. Talks over a ceasefire and hostage deal are continuing in Cairo, but there are conflicting reports on how much progress has been made. Israel and Hamas both sent negotiators on Sunday, a day after CIA Director William Burns arrived in Cairo. In Israel, as many as 100,000 protesters rallied in Tel Aviv on Saturday, calling for a deal to release the hostages and for new elections. One of the most prominent Palestinian prisoners jailed has died from cancer in an Israeli prison. The novelist Walid Dakka had spent the past 38 years locked up after being arrested for killing an Israeli soldier. Rights groups have been pressuring Israel to release him, saying he was in dire need of medical attention. Last month, Amnesty International called for his release, saying that since October 7th, he'd been tortured, humiliated, and denied family visits. Protests over Israel's assault on Gaza continue across the globe. In California, 20 students at Pomona College were arrested Friday after occupying the office of the school's president. The students were protesting the removal of a mock apartheid wall that had been built on campus. The students were also calling for Pomona College to divest from companies aiding Israel's occupation. The International Atomic Energy Agency is warning recent drone strikes on a nuclear reactor at the Russian-controlled Zaporizhzhia plant in Ukraine could increase the risk of a major nuclear accident. The IAEA did not say who carried out the strikes, but Russia's accused Ukraine of carrying out 3 recent drone strikes on Zaporizhzhia, the largest nuclear plant in Europe. In other news from Ukraine, Russia's continuing to intensify its attacks on Kharkiv, Ukraine's second largest city. On Saturday, at least 7 people died in drone strikes that hit residential areas. Meanwhile, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has warned Ukraine could soon run out of air defense missiles.
The current intensity of Russia is quite high. As of today, we have a reserve of air defense missiles, but I believe we need to think about tomorrow. The intensity could stay the same, and then we wouldn't have enough. If they keep hitting Ukraine every day the way they have for the last month, we might run out of missiles.
Zelensky's comments come as Republican lawmakers in Washington remain deeply divided over sending more military aid to Ukraine. The embattled Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson's expected to unveil a new Ukraine funding bill in the coming days. The United States, Japan, Australia, and the Philippines are holding their first joint war exercises in the South China Sea. On Thursday, President Biden's planning to host Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida and Philippines President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. at the White House. On Sunday, the Chinese military held surprise Navy drills in the South China Sea to counter the U.S.-led war games. Over the weekend, U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen met with Chinese Premier Li Qiang in Beijing. Yellen said U.S.-China relations are now on a, quote, more stable footing.
As I have said, the United States seeks a healthy economic relationship with China that benefits both sides. But a healthy relationship must provide a level playing field for firms and workers in both countries.
During an interview on CNBC, Yellen refused to rule out tariffs on Chinese green exports as China ramps up production of solar power technology, electric vehicles, and lithium batteries. Mexico's cut diplomatic ties with Ecuador and withdrew its embassy personnel from Quito after Ecuadorian police and military forces raided the Mexican embassy Friday to arrest former Ecuadorian Vice President Jorge Glass, who had taken refuge there for months. Mexico had granted him asylum protections just hours before dozens of police and military forces stormed the Mexican embassy. Glass served under former leftist Ecuadorian President Rafael Correa. Glass is being investigated for corruption and was previously convicted on graft charges, which he and allies have denounced as politically motivated. The raid on Mexico's embassy in Quito has sparked condemnation across Latin America and the world. This is Mexican Foreign Minister Alicia Bárcena.
Mexico repeats its condemnation of the violation of the immunity of its embassy in Quito and the aggression towards its staff. As per instructions of President Andrés Manuel López Obrador, we are coordinating the return of all our diplomatic staff in Ecuador, along with their families, after the violent attack carried out by the Ecuadorian police in our embassy on the night of Friday, April 5th.
Rwanda is holding a week of commemorations marking the 30th anniversary of the 1994 genocide, during which up to a million Tutsis and moderate Hutus were killed by militia members. Rwandan President Paul Kagame said in a speech Sunday, the international community, quote, failed all of us. This is Alan Nagari of Human Rights Watch.
That this should never happen again. And we have a classical example of a country that at the time was seen to be of no strategic importance when the lives of so many people were at stake. We had a United Nations peacekeeping operation that was that was effectively dismantled, and its size was reduced drastically at the point where the Rwandan people really needed the international community to speak up and actually reinforce that peacekeeping operation. And because the international community failed to do so, then we lost over 800,000 people.
In 2021, French President Emmanuel Macron acknowledged France's role in failing to stop the genocide. Declassified U.S. documents show the Clinton administration refused to label the 1994 mass killings in Rwanda as a genocide. One State Department document read, be careful, genocide finding could commit the U.S. government to actually do something, unquote. Israeli President Isaac Herzog traveled to Rwanda for the 30-year commemoration, where he met with President Kagame. Kagame has been president since 2000 and has led a harsh crackdown on the press. He's also accused of fueling deadly violence in the neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo. Donald Trump pulled in $50 million at a campaign fundraiser hosted by the billionaire hedge fund investor John Paulson. At the fundraising dinner in Florida, Trump told supporters he would extend his 2017 tax cuts, which aided billionaires. Meanwhile, ProPublica is reporting Trump's legal team may have violated ethics rules by not telling an appellate court that a billionaire financier had agreed to help Trump post the full $464 million bond set by the court in his civil fraud case. Despite the offer from billionaire Don Hankey, Trump's lawyers told the court it was a practical impossibility to pay the original bond, which was then lowered to $175 million. In Vermont, a man has been arrested over a suspected act of arson on Senator Bernie Sanders' office in Burlington. Authorities say security footage captured the suspect spraying what appeared to be accelerant outside the office door Friday morning. A motive has not been identified. A Federal Aviation Administration is investigating after the engine cover on a Southwest Airlines Boeing 737-800 plane fell off during takeoff, striking the wing flap and forcing the aircraft to return to Denver's International Airport. It's the latest high-profile incident on a Boeing aircraft as the beleaguered company comes under mounting scrutiny over its safety failures. And millions of people across the United States will be donning protective glasses this afternoon to witness a much-anticipated solar eclipse. In New York's Sullivan County, six prisoners at the Woodburn Correctional Facility will be among those gathering outside to view the rare event. After winning a lawsuit that argued forcing them to remain indoors was a violation of their religious beliefs, the prison has issued a lockdown during the time of the eclipse, which will peak in New York around 3:25 p.m. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. Coming up, Palestinians in Gaza have been making their way into Khan Yunis today, a day after Israeli forces announced they are withdrawing. We'll speak with Dr. Mustafa Barghouti in a minute.
There's a toilet on the roof in the sky.
Don't Care by Rasha Nahas. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Palestinians in Gaza have been making their way into Khan Yunis today, a day after the Israeli military announced it had withdrawn its ground troops from the area. Israel first invaded Khan Yunis, Gaza's second largest city, in December. 4 months later, the city is almost unrecognizable. Scores of buildings are destroyed or damaged. Streets have been bulldozed. Piles of rubble have replaced where schools and shops once stood. The withdrawal brought Israeli troop levels in Gaza to one of the lowest since the war began. Yet Israel is still vowing to invade Rafah, Gaza's southernmost city, which is sheltering some 1.4 million people, more than half of Gaza's population. Meanwhile, talks over a ceasefire and the release of hostages are continuing in Cairo, but there are conflicting reports on how much progress has been made. This all comes as Israel's war on Gaza hit the six-month mark on Sunday, a grim milestone. Over 33,100 Palestinians have been killed, including over 14,000 children. Nearly 76,000 people have been injured. Tens of thousands are missing. About 1.7 million people have been displaced. The United Nations is warning that famine is imminent. To mark the 6 months of the war, World Health Organization Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus wrote on social media platform X, quote, "The deaths and grievous injuries of thousands of children in Gaza will remain a stain on all of humanity. This assault on present and future generations must end. The denial of basic needs, food, fuel, sanitation, shelter, security, and health care is inhumane and intolerable," he wrote. Meanwhile, the International Court of Justice began 2 days of hearings today to consider Nicaragua's request that emergency measures be imposed on Germany over its support for Israel's war on Gaza. Nicaragua is accusing Germany of facilitating the commission of genocide in Gaza. For more, we're joined by two guests. Mohammed Shahada is with us, a writer and analyst from Gaza, chief communications at Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor, columnist at The Forward newspaper, a Jewish weekly in New York. He's joining us from Copenhagen. And joining us from Ramallah in the occupied West Bank is Dr. Mustafa Barghouti. He's a Palestinian physician, activist, and politician who serves as General Secretary of the Palestinian National Initiative. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Dr. Barghouti, we want to start with you in Ramallah. Can you explain what you understand has happened in Gaza at this point, the six-month mark, and also the significance of Israeli troops pulling out of southern Gaza, but saying they are doing that in preparation for an assault on Rafah?
Well, I think you have a combination of two factors here. The first one is that Israel has created a terrible devastation of all of Gaza Strip. We thought that the destruction in the north of Gaza and in Gaza City was the biggest. But now we discover that the destruction they've caused in Khan Yunis is even bigger. Probably more than 80% of all homes and houses have been destroyed, partially or completely. They are trying to make Gaza uninhabitable. They've destroyed totally the infrastructure. More than 405 schools and universities have been destroyed. 33 hospitals out of 36 have been completely damaged. And they've been killing people around the clock. We are talking in 6 months, actually, the number of people killed is no less than 40,000 people, if we include 7,000 who are still missing under the rubble and who have no chance of being alive. In addition to, as you said, to more than 76,000 people, to make it clear to people, this is more than 5% of the population of Gaza Strip. And if that had happened proportionally in the United States of America, you would be talking about more than 12 million people killed or injured in 6 months. It's a horrible devastation. I mean, the suffering of children in particular hurts, it breaks my heart. When you know that 1,000 children have lost their limbs, as one child asked his father, he's 5 years old, and he lost both of his hands. And he was asking his father, "Father, will my hands grow again when I grow up?" This is the kind of severity of what's happening there. But that's one side of the issue. The other side of the issue is that Israel has failed drastically in achieving any of their goals. Their goal, their main goal, was ethnic cleansing of Gaza. The heroic Palestinian population remained in Gaza, did not leave. 700,000 people still are in Gaza City and in the north, regardless of the bombardment, of the killing, of everything. And people do not want to leave their homeland again, as has happened in 1948. But also Israel has failed in destroying the resistance. They have failed in bringing back the Israeli prisoners by force. And they have failed to impose their control in the area. And that's why practically, wherever their tanks remain, they are subjected to also resistance from the Palestinian side. That's why they are withdrawing, but that doesn't mean they're not going to come back. The risk of what they are doing is that they're taking back their tanks and their infantry and allowing the airstrikes to continue in the most possible severe way, which is very devastating because people in Gaza have nothing to defend themselves with against the airstrikes. Also, it is clear that Netanyahu is maneuvering. He's pressured severely by the whole world now to stop this terrible genocide, but he wants to continue because his own political survival depends on the continuation of this war. He knows very well that once the war stops, he will be investigated for his failure on the 7th of October, his failure in this war. And he will be, of course, tried for 4 cases of corruption, each of which could take him to prison. So he wants to even to expand the war if he can. But the reality is that Israel is killing Palestinians now in 3 ways. It is killing Palestinians with bombardment. They've used more than 70,000 tons of explosives. By the way, about 30,000 of that was given by the United States of America. It is like 30 kilograms of explosives for each man, woman, and child in Gaza. It is more than double the explosive power of the two nuclear bombs that were thrown on Hiroshima and Nagasaki in the Second World War. But that's not all. They use bombardment to kill people. They use hunger to kill people. We have 700,000 people practically starving in the north of Gaza. And they use diseases. We have now 35 medical teams from Palestinian Medical Relief Society working now in Gaza. And they report to us that about 1 million people in Gaza today are sick with different diseases, skin diseases, infections. And there are certain epidemics that already started. We have an outbreak of infectious hepatitis. We anticipate more outbreaks of epidemics because children have not received vaccination for more than 184 days. It's a devastating situation, but that's why the whole world must stand up now with Palestinians and tell Israel enough is enough, and genocide must stop, and it will not stop unless there is immediate and complete and permanent ceasefire.
So what do you think is happening with the pullout of the troops? Ben-Gvir said on X today, the security minister, if the prime minister decides to end the war without a broad attack on Rafah in order to defeat Hamas, he will not have a mandate to continue serving as prime minister. Of course, the extremist Ben-Gvir and if they pull out of the government coalition, Netanyahu will no longer be the prime minister if Ben-Gvir and Smotrich do that. But also, you have the conversation that Netanyahu had with President Biden. Of course, we don't know everything they've said. There's been massive protest in the United States demanding that Biden demand an immediate ceasefire, end arms sales to Israel. This latest news, 40 Democratic members of Congress, including former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, have written Biden urging him to halt new arms transfers to Israel following Israel's killing of seven aid workers from the World Central Kitchen, this horrific attack that took place this week. But it must also be galling to Palestinians that it took this horrific act this week to call attention to close to 200 other humanitarian workers who are Palestinian who were killed, 400 medical staff. Overall, of course, over 33,000, if not much more, Palestinians killed in Gaza over this 6 months. But this international attack, since there were people from Australia, Britain, Poland, the United States, Canada, all killed together, put enormous pressure on President Biden. What do you think the U.S. is doing, and what does it need to do, Dr. Barghouti?
Well, first of all, Smotrich and Ben-Gvir are not extremists. They are fascists. And this whole Israeli government does have now a fascist nature. If you look at what they are doing to our prisoners in jail, or what they are doing to the people of Gaza, or even the West Bank, where more than 460 people have been killed also. It's a fascist approach, and these guys want Netanyahu to continue the war. And he wants to continue the war. But if we have to thank anybody for the increasing solidarity with the Palestinian people and the change in the political situation also in the United States, we have to thank the people of these countries. The people of United States, the people of Europe, the people of many, many countries in the world who are now in an actual uprising in support of Palestinian people and against this terrible genocide that has exceeded anything before. And I think this public pressure is the main reason why Biden had to change his position, because he knows very well that he will lose elections if he continues like that. I think the vast majority, you know the figures better than me, but I think the majority of the American public now are against the policy of Biden when it comes to supporting Israel in this terrible genocide. And unfortunately, if the United States wanted, they don't need to waste time. they can immediately force Israel to stop this war. Netanyahu and his fascist government and the Israeli government cannot continue this war without American supplies of weapons, of bombs, which continue, by the way, up till now. And the planes and the political support in the United Nations Security Council and in other places. Now the United States government itself is under pressure because also of another factor, which is the fact that ICJ, International Court of Justice, will most probably decide that what's happening and what happened is genocide. They say it's a plausible genocide. This will hold the United States